Let me welcome all of you as honorable members, our guests, and we have also decided to join us and the department which has been invited for the presentation. And hopefully we are going to have a fruitful engagement. I must make note and take note of the current challenges that are bedeviling the industry. And I think it is also appropriate to make a call to all parties, in particular in the gold industry, as they continue to conduct their negotiations. One of the factors that, in my view, is the issue that I think we must appeal to all parties, that as they negotiate in good faith, such negotiations must be conducted in a manner that does not create an algorithm of closed space for parties to find one another. It's a little bit worrying when parties negotiate and they negotiate mostly on air, because it makes it very difficult to reach areas of compromise. Because if I take a decision and tell the whole world this is my position, it makes it quite difficult to go to a meeting and agree with someone, because I've already stated where do I stand on the net. I think it's just an appeal, even with the department, to try to assist, just to say it might be very good and well measured to conduct negotiations in a manner that gives space to a give and take situation. Because surely, if we negotiate from a point of a standpoint of that seems to be too positional, it makes it very difficult for parties to move from a point of the what I would call flexibility and flexibility, etc. Joining negotiations at all material times can yield the results of what you want. Going to negotiations is an element and a commitment to make sure that we are able to find one another. And we hope that we will have a less protracted process of negotiations. I don't think that this kind of was. Whatever the result, the end result will be, surely there will be results that will end on negotiations. Nothing will be ever be settled without negotiating. So it's much better for parties, all of them, to do all in their best to exhaust almost every avenue, including keeping their position to themselves until they reach the meeting where they can be able to declare their views in one way or the other. I must also say that we hope also that the department in its work will be able to make sure that it finds a way to mitigate on the challenges also that relate to its mandate, in particular around issues that may lead to job losses. And again, even there, we must say that to all parties that are engaged in this process, they must find a way of being able to resolve matters. I always say it doesn't help how the matter ends. If the consequences are the same, it doesn't help. And therefore, one of the primary issues is that job security must remain the area of focus. So we whatever parties are doing in the final analysis, those who are affected and those who work with authority in terms of the labor market processes should do everything possible to avoid a crisis that is coming. On that note, honorable members, we have an agenda in front of us, and I'm afraid that we've got a task again with the committee, which will require also all of us to put our hands on the deck and make sure that we work towards finalizing some of the issues. Amongst other issues, obviously, that we are working on at the level of the myself and the personnel is to take stock of the work that the committee has done so far since its establishment for the fifth parliament last year. We are doing that because we want to see how we're making progress. You will also recall that last year, amongst other issues, that the AG did was to even make a scorecard on the oversight work, whether the committee is performing. And in as much as we identify the discipline as a committee, but it did not say some of the good things. And therefore, it then means that we have got that responsibility to take stock. What are the areas of intervention, starting from the time of the meeting with all the stakeholders? How far have we gone? What is it that we can point out and say these are the areas of the deliverables that the committee has done in terms of its oversight responsibility? We're trying to take that stock, and where there are outstanding issues, we will have to find a way of processing those issues, because as they remain outstanding, they remain a challenge to all of us. On that note, we have got an agenda in front of us. Are there any apologies?
Thank you, Chair. I've got an apology from Mr. Malabi.
Okay. In the absence of other apologies, can we now allow the department to make a presentation? And thereafter, we will have questions of clarity and comment, and find a way forward in relation to what we have presented. You will introduce, doesn't mean that because your face is familiar in the committee, you will always remember you, especially with your proximity to the ground. It may be quite difficult to always remember. So the DDG is up to you, and you introduce your team.
Thank you very much, Honorable. Good morning, honorable members. Perhaps before we start with the introduction of the team, allow us to convey the apology of the Minister, Deputy Minister and Director General. They are participating in a mining retreat, which Minister has called today and tomorrow, as part of the work of the department to deal with the current challenges that are facing the industry. And my name, Honorable Chairman of members, is Mosama Musa. I am with the Department of Mineral Resources. There's a team here with me. I'll start tonight on my left, so that I can introduce the team.
Good morning, honorable members. I am Tata Jali from the Department of Mineral Resources.
Wait, members, don't make my meeting difficult. So that no Jali can help us. What are you doing in this department? I might come there and then we find that they are just a message. And when we ask questions, you then say, no, no, that's what I was trying to say. So we must make a determination whether there is capacity to respond when we ask.
My name is Osama Buza. I am Deputy Director General of Mineral Policy and Promotion in the KMI.
Thank you. My name is Mbanza Jali, working in the Office of Deputy Director General in Policy and Promotion.
Good morning. My name is Tulia Kunin, the regional manager for the Western Cape region.
Honorable members, my name is Kaya Matrose. I'm in the Office of the Director General, DMR.
The only thing that you know is that Makakola even told you that his apology for not being in this meeting has been accepted.
Thank you,
Chair,
honorable
members. At this Makakola, you know. You don't have to read page by page what you can say. You can talk to your boss. But don't jump in critical lines and say in sense, we'll manage, we'll be patient with your case.
Thank you. Honourable members, the presentation today is about the mining pattern. And in the content, we'll give you a bit of background very quickly, and we'll go through the assessment methodology so that we can take you to confidence what it is that we have done to derive with the analysis that we have. We'll take you through the process that we followed, the reporting framework, and then we'll get into results and we'll conclude. Honorable members, you're quite aware that the mining charter came into force in October 2004. So at the end of December last year, it was exactly 10 years. The charter came into effect. It was amended in 2010, and it focused in 2010 on facilitating sustainable growth, development, and transformation of the industry. There are a few critical things that happened in 2010 when it was amended. One is it introduced the notion of meaningful economic participation. Having learned from the assessment of 2009 that at that time the findings of 2009 indicated that there was a handful of beneficiaries, and it further indicated that the flow, the trickle benefit to the intended beneficiary was extremely limited. And so that then necessitated in the amendment that we introduce a broader definition at that time in 2010 of meaningful economic participation as well as full shareholder rights, effectively introducing the notion of broad-basedness in the charter. We developed the reporting framework, and in the development of this framework, the minister established a structure underneath it, constituted by obviously the department, organized business, both large and small, as well as organized unions. In particular, NUM, Solidarity, as well as UASA, who participated in this casting. And as the department, we translated the template, which was a cell-based, into a web-based system, so that we can improve the ease of collecting, of submitting data, number one, as well as processing that data. Okay, just to take you through the methodology, honorable members, I think this tool is what I've just explained, shifting from a cell-based to web-based, so that we can improve the ease of submission, collection, as well as processing of the data. Next slide. The most important thing in this slide is that we sought the assistance of an actuarial scientist in validating the data and all the steps that we have taken, so that we have the, we can present this data with the confidence that we can. Yes, we introduced the notion of weighting of the data, and I just want to explain a little bit here what we mean. Out of the operating mines and quarries that could submit data, you could have a range from a company that employs 15,000 plus people to an operation that employs 2 people. And so if you are comparing an operation with 15,000 employees or 30,000 to 2, the averaging therefore will not reflect an adequate picture. And so we have grouped our data in those 2 categories. The first category is being all rights are equal, irrespective of how big an operation is or how small it is. And then we introduce the weighting, which then brings the significance of the size of the company into the picture. And so all our analysis will demonstrate those 2 categories. Data not weighted and data weighted. And you'll see how the performance shifts and our interpretation of the meaning of the shift thereof as the data shifts. To undertake the weighting, we use the number of employees. And we chose this measure of employees because it captures the social impact of the mining operation. And it is not very far from any other index that one can elect to use. One could have elected to use production or revenue or net present value, but we elected to use the employees of the mine. And we've categorized the sizes of the mines into 3. The large operations are those with more than 5,000 people, and between 101 and 5,000 people, those are considered medium-sized, and less than 100, those are small operations. skip through that. On using the framework reporting that we use to assess the transformation status against the demanding charter scorecard, I just wanted to emphasize that the basis of the scorecard is, as it is currently applicable, is that there are three elements in the scorecard that are considered non-negotiable. So those are a yes or no. Either you are compliant or not. And one is reporting, ownership is the other, and the last one is housing and living conditions. The others, they have a weighting that is attached to them as contained in the scorecard of the charter, and that is procurement, employment, equity, human resources development, mining community development, as well as the sustainable development element. The next couple of slides are really explaining what is already contained in the charter for each of the elements. I would only spend a little bit of time on the first one, the ownership one, purely because it has four categories that I just want to explain a little bit. And those categories are going to come out in the graphs of our analysis later on. And I wish to emphasize that these categories are giving expression to the definition of meaningful economic participation that was explained earlier. So, the first category, this category one, is if a company has reached 26%, irrespective of if they are 26% or above, irrespective of whether they are broad-based or not, if they have only an entrepreneur or ESOP or community or not all three combinations as defined in the meaningful economic participation, but they are above 26%. So we put those under category one. Category two is if they are meeting and exceeding 26% and they are broad-based as defined in the meaningful economic participation. That is, they have identifiable and HDSA partners in the form of the Black Entrepreneur, Employee Share Ownership Scheme, as well as communities. But there is no evidence of cash, tricky cash flow that goes to the HDSA beneficiary. That's category two. What we call category two plus is not only are they broad-based, but there is also evidence of a tricky dividend. And then category three, irrespective of how many identifiable beneficiaries you have, you fall below 26% nevertheless. Honorable members, I must indicate at this stage that the information that we have received here is in terms of section 28 of the MPRDA that places an obligation on the rights holder to provide the department with correct information. And that correctness of the information lies as the responsibility of the right holder. So everything that we will be presenting here is premised on the provisions of Section 26, as it were, that obliges the right holder to provide correct information that is not misleading the department in any sense. The housing and living conditions, it was agreed among stakeholders in 2010 that all the existing hostels would be upgraded to restore the dignity of mine workers. This was reflected in all the documents that we have developed together with our stakeholders, all of them, in the room, who are the signatory of the declaration that is giving effect to the mining charter as it were. On procurement and enterprise development, the targets that were agreed to is that capital goods will be at 40% procured from what has been defined in the charter as BEE entities, services at 70%, consumables at 50%, and that there will be facilitation of 0.5% of the annual expenditure on procurement from multinational suppliers. And this is the 0.5% that would come from the multinational suppliers, not from the mining rights holders. Next slide. The employment equity sets the 40% threshold with emphasis on demographic spread. At the levels of top management, senior management, middle management, junior management, as well as core skills, all of them are set at a minimum of 40%. And human resources development, this we agreed to ramp it up from 2010 to 2014 to achieve a threshold of 5% of the payroll, and this excluding the statutory skills development levy of 1%. The mine community development, this one effectively measures against the SLP commitments that have been made, and that they indeed remain on track in terms of their implementation. And sustainable development and growth, there's three aspects to it. The one is progress on implementing the commitment of the Mine Health and Safety Summit, as it were. Number two is the extent of implementation of the EMP. And the last part is that all samples that require research will be analyzed in South Africa. Honorable members, in this slide, we demonstrate the significance of the weighting of the right holders by size. And so you notice that where we put the red block indicates that 15 operations, 15 operations constitute 68% of total employment in the mining industry. 68% from 15 operations. That's two-thirds, slightly more than two-thirds of the industry in terms of employment. It's 15 operations that are responsible for those. And that demonstrates, therefore, the significance of why it became so important for us to use employees as an index. The next slide. Oh, yes. Honorable members, we have about 1,000, just under 1,700 mines and parish. As well as permits, mining rights holders and permits and bulk sampling entities and so on. So if you exclude the permits and those that are bulk sampling and so on, there is 962 rights holders that were eligible so if you also exclude those operations that are under 2 years in operations. So those are not, they were not legible for submitting data. So, but then the 62 were legible for submitting data. Out of those 442 respondents, it looks like a very low figure, 442 against 952. But that's more than 95% coverage of the employment. So effectively, all the large and all the medium-sized companies as they were categorized had submitted. The problem of the larger figure that you see is essentially from the small-scale miners, the permit holders in the main, some of whom may not necessarily have the access to web-based and so on. But we are comfortable to work with a 95-plus percentage of coverage of employment. In statistics, it doesn't get better than that in terms of representativity. Next slide. It is here, honorable members, that we talked about the four categories, and we are looking at ownership here. And you notice that we use not weighted and weighted. As you may recall, honorable members, we said not weighted means all mining rights holders are equal, irrespective of whether they are two employees or 50,000 employees. Then when it's weighted, the significance of the weight in terms of employees brought into shape. And we explained the four categories, you can call one being anything that's above 26%, two being broad-based but not triple dividend, and two plus broad-based with triple dividend, and three being below 26%. And our findings on ownership is that 79% not weighted of companies are above the 26% in category 1. And that gave expression to a what is called in statistical terms a simple average of 80.6%. So that means if you take the average compliance with 26%, notwithstanding the lack of broad-basedness, it will be sitting at 80.6%. However, if that is weighted, the simple average increases to 32.5%, and 90% of companies are compliant. Also, they are above 26%. However, if we go to the broadened definition of meaningful economic participation as it is contained in the 2010 Charter, then you will notice that not weighted, it is only 6.3%, and if it's weighted, it's 20% of the right holders that meet the criteria. In our analysis, we also took into account the notion of continuing consequences of previous deals that are claimed by mining holders where it was reported in the system. And you will notice that the continuing consequence, as it is defined in the Charter, is a very, it's in green. And if you take what is reported as continuing consequences, you notice that it is a very insignificant part of the graph. By far, insignificant. Honourable members, in the next slide, we are trying to demonstrate what we call the extent of broad-based deals in all categories. And this is the unweighted bit. I will focus on the 0%. Just look at the part where it is 0. And this is not weighted category. What this is saying is which of the categories received the most or the least empowerment of all transactions. And you would notice that in two-thirds of transactions, 67%, employees were not considered in the jails. That's what the graph is saying. Because 67% of employees or staff is at zero. And this is all not weighted. And I just want to quickly, and if we focus only on the employees, and you move to the next slide, you'll notice that when it is weighted, then there is a significant drop from 67% to 22% of the same catalog. What this means, what this is telling us, is that larger companies have empowered their workers. Because when you, the weighting, when you bring the weighting into the graph, remember in the first one, everyone is equal. And so it would seem that two-thirds of the employees are not considered. But when you move into the next slide, you then see a significant drop of the workers at 0% from 7% to 22%. And that indicates that the workers have been the beneficiaries of the greater, of the larger companies. If you go back one slide and you look at entrepreneurs, you see that when it's not weighted, black entrepreneurs who have not been in the jails are at 38%. But if you move to the next slide, that increases substantially to 44%. And that indicates that there has been a shift of the pattern of empowerment traditionally from entrepreneurs to begin to broaden the participation by including more workers. So not all workers are included in all deals, but the two graphs are indicating a shift from entrepreneurs towards workers, particularly for the larger companies. Honorable members, the next slide demonstrates what we call economic benefits. And so what this effectively is that what has been the tripping dividend? What has been, has there been any value created for the HDFA? And I think it's important to read this graph in the context of the 79% of companies that are above 26%. Because it's not helpful for us to come and say to you, we are transforming this industry, when the beneficiaries of the industry are not receiving any benefit. It would be helpful if we said the industry is transforming and we can see that the benefit is flowing through to the beneficiaries. And so from the data that has been submitted to us, as it has been requested and agreed upon by all stakeholders, we then define economic benefit as the value of HDSA shareholding today minus the outstanding loan plus the dividends that are paid to beneficiaries. And about, I think what is said is that out of the 39%, that is above 26%, 63.6% have received zero benefit from these transactions. Unweighted. However, when the data is weighted in terms of employees, again, you can see a significant reduction from 63% to 37%. And this is indicating to us that the larger companies have created a bit of value for the HDFA's beneficiaries. And to a far lesser extent, the smaller, the medium and the junior companies. Yes, sir.
On housing, honourable members, we looked at the reduction in occupancy or hostel conversions by 2014, and we've divided this by we gave it the provincial background, but I'll focus on the national average for the purpose of the presentation today. And this is an area that we had said that by 2014 all the hostels would have reduced the occupancy to one single person per room, or conversion of the hostels would have been concluded. And 55%, just marginally above half of the companies that were eligible for conversion of hostels have effectively done that. We still have 45% that has not converted their hostels. Next slide. We move to slide 28. I think what we have done in slide 28 was to aggregate all the other elements that other than the three that are non-negotiable that we spoke about. And that is every other element of the charter except ownership, reporting, as well as conversion of hostels. And there is only one company that has really, that is sitting at 100% in terms of all these elements. And that is an Exaro operation called Geopark. The others are sort of ranging between 90 and 100%, 75 and 90%, and 50 and 75%. In terms of the charter, the requirement is that they sit above 50%. They don't have to necessarily be at 100% as an Exaro operation for these other elements, the other six elements. Those that worry us are the bottom two quartiles, between 0 and 25%, as well as 25 and 50%. So we'll go into details in terms of the weighting, as it were. I think this one amplifies the combined element with the weighting by employee, perhaps indicating again with the shift of the graph towards the right that the larger companies are generally embraced the elements of the chart. But with the weighting, you can see a shift more towards the right. If you look, for instance, at those companies that are between 0 and 25% unweighted in the previous slide, mm-hmm. they are sitting at 9.5%. And if you put a weighting by employees, that reduces to 5.3%. And you see the shift towards the right, indicating that the larger companies have, to some extent, embraced the charter, as it were. On procurement, we start with capital goods. The target is 40%, and just to indicate again that if the data is unweighted, about 50% of companies that have reported have procured less than 50% of capital goods in terms of the charter, unweighted. Now, if you move to the next slide and keep your eye on the less than 10% bar to the extreme left, you'll notice that drops from 49.9% to 14.6%. It's a consistent messaging again that there have been touching gains in terms of embracing the charter and implementing the charter, as it were, by the larger organizations in the main. When we look at the services, the target is 70%, and we see a similar trend as we have observed with many of the other elements, that about 33.2% of companies have procured less than 10% of services from GEE entities, unweighted. And when that data is weighted, it substantially reduces to about 13.3%. And when we move to consumable goods, again, we focus on the extreme. Less than 10% of consumables procured, unweighted is 32.2%, and weighted is 30.7%. You can see a consistent trend in terms of this separation of weighted and unweighted. In terms of multinational suppliers' contribution to the social fund, you notice that almost at 0.94% of the right holders unweighted had not lifted a finger in facilitating this part of the element of the charter. When that is weighted, there is a reduction somewhat from 94.4% to 82.9%. Honorable members, on employment equity, if you allow me, we'll flip through the next two slides and go into the table. And the table there gives you a breakdown of participation in terms of the demographics in South Africa. And below that table, it gives you an indication of the EAP, that is the economically active population threshold as well, for each of the categories of our demographics. You will notice that in this analysis it includes the white race, it also includes the foreign nationals, so that you can have the total picture of the employment in the industry as it were, and the extent of representation. I think what is of great concern to us is that participation of women, irrespective of race, remains very low in the industry, particularly throughout all categories. And that is something that perhaps we need to pay particular attention to. So if you put all the percentages of females in all the categories, the representation is not as great as it should be. The next slide is on the human resources development expenditure. Honorable members, you may recall we indicated that the target is 5%, and again focusing on the extreme left, just to demonstrate the point, is that those who are below 5% unweighted, it's about 52%. When the data is however weighted, you see a substantial reduction of those below 5% threshold to 43%. That is those that are falling below the target of 5%. On mine community development, and I must emphasize that this one includes both communities that are proximate to operations as well as labor sending areas. And we have categorized this in terms of all the provinces in the same way that we have done the housing category. Without spending too much time on it, the national performance indicates that marginally above a third of all mine right holders have indeed implemented their social and labor plan, and they are up to date with the implementation thereof. And in the next slide, we look at the implementation of approved EMPs and the extent of implementation against the approved EMPs. You would expect that, given the sensitivity of the environment, that everyone would be sitting at 100% implementation of what has been committed in the environmental management plan. However, when we look at the data, as it were, unweighted, only 44.5% of all mining rights holders are up to date with the implementation of the environmental management programs, irrespective of that. And this is an area that for the first time we see a reversal from the trend that we have been talking about all along. That when the data is weighted, in fact, there is a marginal increase to 48.6%, which says to us that irrespective of the size of the company, it would seem that we have not paid as much attention to environmental management progress and the implementation thereof as well as we should. And that is very unfortunate. On the implementation of the tripartite action plan, I must emphasize here, honorable members, that there were six different categories. And we put the categories together, but we can make information available if the honorable members so require. So in here are both health as well as safety aspects of the tripartite action plan. You know, honorable members, that on the safety aspect, the industry has significantly improved on the performance and the implementation of the action plan. What is unfortunately dragging the industry backwards is that on the health aspect, the element of health we have not made as much progress as we should. So when all the six elements are aggregated, it really begins to show a very negative performance of the industry, with about two-thirds sitting below 10% of the implementation. I think, as I've explained, the emphasis was placed on the safety aspect of the tripartite action plan and less so on the health aspect. And the picture doesn't change much whether the data is weighted or unweighted. The last element we evaluated, honorable members, is the commitment we made on utilization of South African research facilities, and we set a target of 100% by 2014. That every sample that you take, be it for exploration, be it for assaying purposes, we will analyze it using South African facilities. And we find that just under two-thirds are analyzing in South Africa, and marginally below a third are below 10% in terms of the analysis using South African facilities. And this is data unweighted, and when we move to the next slide, you will see a substantial increase to 84% And perhaps this is now reverting back to the original trend that we observed, that the larger companies are seemingly analyzing their samples here in South Africa. In conclusion, honorable members, a number of companies unfortunately have not met the required 2014 target of implementation of the Charter. Particular concern and observation from our side is that both mine workers and communities remain the least beneficiaries from the transformation of the industry, particularly empowerment transaction. You have observed that a majority of empowerment transaction, even though they are about 26%, but they are not broad-based as it is dictated in the amended charter of 2010. And you notice that even though many of them are above 26%, there is limited economic benefit for HDSA beneficiaries. So, is the 26% that is reported worth a piece of paper in written on if it is not translating into the direct benefit to the HDSA beneficiaries? It would seem not. We acknowledge, in conclusion, Honorable Members, that the Charter does not prescribe, and elected not to prescribe, the mechanism of funding empowerment transactions. And this seems to have created loopholes for unsustainable things. We thank you very much for your time and listening to the presentation. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. You try to let us say. Although this is not to be much of a rest or good news. Honorable Stephen, I'm not sure. You so much fear the ANC that you didn't want to sit in between them. You rather sit there. The debate of yesterday ended yesterday. You can come and sit next to your colleagues in the committee. Don't fear your colleagues. They are colleagues.
You blame them, Mr. Chair.
Matrana, he talked too much.
I know your problem with Honorable Matrana, that you always move it between the same committees. Now, don't carry your knickers from the other committees.
If you want me, I'll go there.
All right, it's okay. But next time you must be this right, so that we don't forget you.
It was actually the beer who take me away.
Okay. No, you wanted to any. I saw your hand. Any other Honorable Schmidt, Honorable Mandela. Okay,
Honorable Stephen. Chairperson, I folded from some of the pages, not to keep the items issues on page 9. I said page 18. If you go to page 18, the analysis based on 442 mining license issues in the information extracted at the date of February. This is not right. That information is not right. The government made a good start actually when it opened up or loosened up the mineral rights. Helped by most of the majority players in this industry. and I issued manual rights to 9,000, 10,000, to about 10,000 people. We still, I say we, in the 10,000 miners, only 440 exceed their rights. And although there's probably more than 10,000 people mining small scale in South Africa at present, we need clear policy and guidelines that will eliminate confusion between small scale mining and illegal mining, for one. Also on ownership, but I've skipped some places that I've marked here. On the reporting framework, I just want to say, in a democratic South Africa still, they've listed here all on the reporting framework, but in a democratic South Africa still, South African legislation still prevents traditional leaders from participating in certain institutions, such as mining for one, even attend meetings, and even local government. You know, one of the big problems in this country with xenophobia and all of that was because local people was ignored. I'm of course he remained a recognized custodian of our traditional values and customs and the way of life. But I bring mining bring in foreign workers from other places and the local communities is ignored. And this is a very big problem in mining. Now back to ownership. And I must say I'm still also a bit disappointed that the department concentrates here more on human resource development and mining industry is falling apart around them. It's shedding thousands and thousands of jobs and nothing really substantial or sustainable on the sustainability of the industry. Apart from giving us a few figures that is not reasonable under the present conditions, and I want to say something here now to them that I actually said in their house yesterday. Strikes make a shift in the power dynamics, and it shows that a modus operandi and even the future of gold mining in South Africa would no longer be determined by managers and owners. Unions, and in a way government itself, has jumped into the driving seat, and we hope that they understand the magnitude of this responsibility, because investors certainly do. I thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I think the most important point is that with statistics, you can have any outcome you desire. So it depends on how you interpret statistics. The weighting you place on certain factors, etc., etc. But that brings me to two issues. One, it's clear that the Chamber of Mines do not agree with the outcome of this report, and in particular with what aspect the Chamber of Mines do disagree and have taken you to court, as I understand. Can you give an indication as to where that court case is at the moment? Secondly, why is it that the number of employees have been used as the criteria? What would be the effect of having the net income or the gross income or the net profit or whatever other financial standards being used? In other words, are those limitations available? Have those limitations been worked out so that we can see what the consequences of the, not the size of the employees at the mine, but also a financial aspect, because eventually goes down to the end of the It's an economic cluster. It's not a social, although it's very important, it's not a social welfare cluster, and therefore it's an economic activity. But secondly, the consequences for mining companies who do not comply or have not complied according to you. What is the department's point of view as to what it intends to do? Is it going to do what it did with Optimum Coal Mine yesterday, I believe, where they've withdrawn the license, which could be arguable only be a, like someone said yesterday, killing a snail with a sledgehammer. What is the proposed methodology that Spartan 10 is using for those companies who apparently not comply? Then, My concern is that certain of these mining companies are in a position where clearly stand at risk of either being closed or being placed under business rescue programs or licenses being canceled by the minister. Now, are there any provision made for what I think is colloquially called out there immediate closure plan, immediate closure provision? Because ultimately it has an environmental consequence, it has a social consequence, it has a lot of other consequences which are dire ramifications constantly. Are there such provisions made? Is there proper oversight? Is there proper control over those immediate closure provisions? It flows from the discussion we had with Exaru and from a longer oversight list we had about 2 weeks ago. So they said that we were complying with the immediate closure plans and provisions, etc., etc. There's one more. Then the issue of we're talking about the financial aspect, consequences of so-called non-adherence. And in particular, the value, the method of determination of the net asset value, which you refer to as NAV. Many, if not most, if I understand correctly, mining operations, if not mining houses, because of the banks not being prepared to fund these transactions anymore, it is now dependent on mining houses, whether at operational level or at company level, to provide loans to those VE companies or partners. The only way, as I understand it, of those loans being repaid is by virtue of the dividends to be paid. I hope I'm right so far. Now, the payment of dividends depend on economic performance of that company. So if you have a situation where you have mines closing down, or possibly closing down, or ministers threatening to close it, to cancel mining rights, you have a situation where, in my view, the two lines are crossing, because if there are no dividends for companies, VE subsidiaries, or partners, whatever you would like to call them, they are not going to have an income, and the loan is not going to be deducted, and therefore it has an impact on other transactions in which that VE entity may be involved. An instance, a very good example was, once again, 2 weeks ago with Exaru. Because we had a presentation by Exaru there, with a VE partner involved, and I think Mr. Babagula is agreeing, where everyone we walked out of that meeting, that same evening or the following morning, the VE partner of Exaru had to go and be assisted, had to be assisted by Exaru to the tune of 400 million rand, because what had happened? The dividend which Exaru has been expecting from Kumba had not realized because of the financial consequences or the financial positions we found ourselves in. So all I'm saying, that's the hard reality. So not only is Exaru in a different position and the VE entity, I think the Main Street 333, I think, is a VE entity, in a less optimum or in a less beneficial financial position, to the extent that they indicated that some of the SRP programs they are undertaking is becoming more difficult because of economic positions. We have a squeeze on them to comply with certain requirements continuously, and even threats of those requirements being lifted. Now, somewhere along the line, Honourable Chair, those two lines are going to be crossed. So if you keep on increasing requirements which mining companies have to meet, and in an economic situation as we have at the moment, someone has to consider the consequences of it. Now, hopefully the minister does in these 2 days of the Lakota, which is today. But if it keeps on canceling mining rights like it did yesterday, we are not going to be in a position to support this mining industry. In fact, we've already declared, as I understand, the department and the minister of mines, the mining industry as an enemy, rather than an ally in trying to overcome the job shedding we are declaring to someone
in terms of this week. So why are we, the question I'm trying to say, and I'll close off with, is why are we making the industry an opponent rather than an other? Because all I'm seeing is the requirements in being increased and mining companies being ready on issues which is important, it's very, very important, but it's not creating the sustainability of the mining industry, which we had a discussion yesterday. Are these all issues which create to the sustainability of the mining industry? That is a question mark which we had yesterday, the issue topic we discussed, and that's the question we should ask ourselves. Because without any mines, there can be 500,000 people without jobs. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'd like to thank the department for the presentation by Imam Mahmoud. I see a lot of respect taught well by Nkosi Tele to speak for us traditional leaders. So it's good to hear that voice coming through. Honorable Chairperson, if I may sustain clarity to a series of questions. Perhaps to start off on slide number 3, mining charter was amended in 2010 to facilitate sustainable growth, development, and transformation of South African mining industry. The question is, how far have we facilitated a sustainable growth and development and transformation of the South African industry? Further down on the same page or same slide, Chairperson, we talk about the shareholders' rights on broad base. And I'd like to understand what percentage can we regard to the shareholders' right for broad base? If 26% was set for BEE, but there's a certain tendency of thinking that the required minimum, 26%, is actually what is to be the outcome. And I'd like to understand, since we are now moving to a discussion of broad base, and how much, what are we looking at in terms of the shareholder percentage in that regard? On slide number 4, Chairperson, it talks to the target set, which should have been met. The bullet point there says that the mining charter and the period at which all target sets should have been met. And I'd like to understand in this 10-year anniversary, which was marked in December 2014, have we really set have the set targets been met? Right. We are marked from a 10-year anniversary. We should be able to start there. Equating if some of these targets that have been met, and as to those that have been met, what is to be done in regards to that. Slide number 11, Chairperson, talks to on bullet point number 2. The size was determined by the number of employees per mining right. I'd like to understand, is the number of employees per mining right a guide or an indicator of how many houses ought to be built by the mining right holder? To maintain clarity in that regard, because we seem to have challenges in that regard. Particularly fresh coming from oversight. It's quite interesting that someone applies for a mining right, gets a mining right, and starts operating. And in the example of Lafarge in Limpopo, to get there, they haven't built a single house for their employees, and they say, no, but our employees come from the community nearby. But the mining charter says you must build sustainable human settlements for your employees, and you can't just refer to they just come from the community. You ought to be doing something to empowering them to have proper housing facilities. Slide number 13, Chairperson, it talks to the reduction in occupancy to one person per room, and the conversion of hostels into family units. What I'd like to understand, Chairperson, in this regard is, what does this really mean? Because these mining houses interpret this that to be providing the walls, and some actually have no regard whatsoever in claiming that employees come from the neighboring community. So what I'm trying to understand in this regard, Chairperson, is that yes, the hostels are being done away with, and they are being turned into family units. But what do we understand to be a family unit? It can't be just walls. In the instance of, again, I would speak from the oversight, we had in Secunda, we visited Evander Mine, and we're able to see some of the single room units. You find that it's just a wall-to-wall, and all they've done is to put a bed frame, a steel frame. No mattress, nothing else in that. And who measures then this kind of family unit or a single room unit? What are the basic necessities that should be prescribed in that family unit or single room? And I come from the basis of oversight in Northwest Province, where we visited Royal Bafokeng, and I would say they are building a Rolls Royce of housing in terms of their employees. And we also look at the housing that we saw in terms of Anglo Platinum. Also would be regarded the same sense of housing. But when you see the broken down, worn out Toyota kind of accommodation, is then a challenge. So I want to know what standard is being put out there, and what are the basic necessities that we are prescribing for our employees who form part of the laborers in this mine. Honorable Chair, slide number 25. If you look at the national figures, it states that 45% of mines are not meeting the reduction in occupancy or conversion of hostels to family units. I'd like to understand in that regard what measures or penalties are there for mines not meeting the reduction in occupancy or conversion of hostel to family units. We can't just sit and throw this finger that 45% of them are not meeting the target. Question is, what are you doing about that in the department? What penalties are there? If you are not meeting the set targets, and one of the primary issues you received the license for, I believe that the license should be taken away. So what is the department doing in that regard to hold these mining right holders accountable for their commitments? Slide number 43, Chairperson. We are talking to, it talks to mines not meeting their mine community development targets. And there is a staggering 64.4% of mines not meeting their MCD targets. I'd like to understand in this regard, Chairperson, what measures or penalties are in place for those mines that are not meeting their mine community development targets. Last but not least, Chairperson, as I conclude, on slide number 50, Chairperson, the department says a number of mining companies have not met the required 2014 target of implementation of the mining charter. I'd like to understand, Chairperson, what do you really mean by this? What is the real number that we are talking about, because this should be calculated, equated, so that we come out with the right steps and speak to the specifics. We cannot be speaking in general and saying a number of mining companies. I want us to look at what are the details. Who are these companies that are not meeting the required targets? And what measures or penalties are in place to deal and address this? Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Members, Honorable Chair. Honorable Chair, I think the only sound of rights that you make reference to, we perhaps need to provide clarity that the bulk of those were prospecting rights, not mining. And so many of them have not graduated from prospecting into mining. And so, and therefore they would not have been a subject of this assessment. And certainly you're quite correct that the introduction of the MPRPA brought about that transformation in making it possible for the historically disadvantaged to have access into the rights. But certainly, they would not have as yet been eligible for the assessment of mining charter compliance. We have received a legal opinion from a judge in the Free State, or is it a legal opinion, in fact, a decision, a judgment relating to this separation of or emphasis on illegal mining to be included in the law, and have sought a legal opinion and certainly agree that it is something that must be explicitly stated in the law, this illegal mining. The foreign workers. The extent of foreign workers perhaps could be something that we would be worried about if we notice that a great majority of workers in the industry or the leadership was constituted by foreigners. But I think as the statistics show, in the same way that we would love for South Africans to go and gain experience in other parts of the world. That perhaps is not unreasonable for us as South Africans to have others coming into our shores as well as learning. I was just trying to find that that graph. So the table. You can take us to the table. Yeah. I think if you look at the foreign national representation, around 8%, 8.5%. At the board level, 1.8% at middle management, the main, that is 4% at junior management, and around 18% at the core skills level. Is it a disaster? I don't know what that's a conversation that South Africa should have about the extent of tolerance of the foreigners in the country. The consultation with traditional leaders in the law is there. We can argue as to whether traditional leaders are sufficiently consulted and considered in the processing of applications. But they are defined as legal occupiers of the land, and by law, every right holder is required to consult all the legal occupiers of the land, including traditional. But I think that as a department, it might be useful for us to undertake a comprehensive analysis of the extent of consultation in land owned by your WC. Honorable Schmidt, I will try not to discuss the change of the chambers and the department. I'm sure as an advocate you will appreciate it. But the statement that was released by the Chamber of Mines the day after Minister released the report and the statistics that were released on that day and here he shared with you, I don't care. And so I don't think that we are largely in disagreement. The issue is the interpretation of the applicability of what they call one from power. That is the only issue that is seeking in Port Plant. And you know that Minister has announced that something that could assist with regulatory process so that we get the court to declare and make a ruling on the implementation plan. And I don't know if it's necessarily effective. In fact, I think it's actually a good thing. That because we say that our laws are justiciable in the country, this is a demonstration to that extent that our laws are indeed justiciable. And I think the fact that we are in the court with the chamber should be seen as a positive thing, not necessarily as a negative. That's the view I would make. I think on the issue of why we use employee as an index and that this is not a, a social grant, again, I'll take you to the very chamber results and our results. The chamber used financial index and we use employees. And we end up with very similar results. And I think it goes to the very heart that in this case, and where we are currently as a country, there is a direct linkage between employees and the number of employees and the financial index. Because the extent to which you are able to produce and generate revenue is currently a subject of how many employees you have. And so the correlation is almost one-to-one. And it doesn't matter which index you, you use, you end up at the right, at the same similar level. And perhaps that's what's important here. Until such time that we have mechanized, and in a country that is completely mechanized in the industry, the choice of employees as a weighting would be a completely mechanized. But because our industry is labor intensive, there's a direct correlation. And I can say with confidence, going back again to the results that were released independently, and perhaps not in a particularly good environment, but it showed that the results were pretty much the same. But I also perhaps just need to say that the department implements the law. It regulates. It does not require a permission of those that it regulates to do its job. I think that is also very important. Because there is an impression created sometimes that we need a permission of certain groupings for us to do our job. And I think that's it. We do consult, we do engage with our stakeholders, but when it comes to releasing results, it is kind of going a bit too far that we must ask those that we regulate to give us permission to regulate them. I also just want to deal with this issue of the, impression created that the department can just go and take a license, overnight. I think the law is very clear on what happens. If you are found to be non-compliant, you are issued with a notice to correct, refreshing and decree. You are given a time frame to correct, and you are allowed to make a representation as to circumstances under which you may or may not be able to be compliant, and the minister will consider the representation that you make as the right holder, and the final decision will be made. It is incorrect to create the impression that we are on the rampage just to go and take everyone's rights of license and driving them. What we do is because someone has been non-compliant. And someone has ignored the notice. I think we must also be careful that we are not a government that tolerates non-compliance and total disrespect of the laws of the land. Because if someone has been non-compliant and they've been approached and they've been asked in terms of the law to correct and or make representation, and they still don't, And I don't know if what we are being asked is to say, it's okay, let us promote unlawlessness as a country. And I hope that my interpretation is incorrect, that we are not being called to advance unlawlessness. I think it's important that we maintain the integrity of our constitution,
and the extent to which people remain compliant to the laws of the land as far as is possible and in a responsible manner. The provision for immediate closure. When you apply for a right, people make a commitment, and one of the conditions is that they will make an annual provision for the environmental liability. In the event that things change overnight, again, every little cent that is required for closure should be available. That is the law. But we have noticed and know that the gaps that we are closing is that there are trusts that are created for this liability, and when people are confronted with financial difficulties, they go and access those funds for themselves and for their operations. And then they come to honorable members in oversight visits and inform the honorable members that the department is making unrealistic demands. Some of them we have no problem. And so the measures are there. If the provisions are in place and the funds are made available, there should be no reason as to whether there's a necessity for immediate closure or not. Honorable State, the definition of meaningful economic participation in the Act, sorry, in the Charter, meaningful economic participation, the second bullet, and I just want to read the first few words of it. It says, barring any unfavorable market conditions. Now, I don't understand how anyone can then come and claim that we were not able to pay dividends because the environment was negative. The Charter has already provided for a negative environment. And if you are not able to pay the dividends because the environment is difficult, you are already tainted. What you don't do is abuse the unfavorable market conditions. How can I put this? The mining industry overall, if you take an aggregated view, is going through a very difficult time. But if you take a granular analysis of the industry and look at its commodity by commodity, the performance is very different. And some of our major commodities, platinum, gold, coal, iron ore, accepted. But when you look at the price of nickel, it's been on the rise. And we've just opened a nickel mine. Invested 10 billion in the development of the mine. That's a positive thing. And so it would be very strange if someone operating in that space came and abused that option of hiring unfavorable conditions. And that's where the representation is made, and the department considers this representation. And I honestly don't understand. Those provisions are there. And for anyone to create an impression that you didn't pay dividends or the other is going to take your license, I don't know where this is coming from. Our laws are very clear. And you can see that the condition is made. The provision is made as well for unfavorable conditions, and that includes if there is genuine challenges with the implementation of the social and labor plan or any of the aspects of the law. I'm not sure about us declaring mining as an enemy. I don't know where that comes from. I think the minister always affirms the importance of the industry to South Africa's economy. As a catalyst for development, and that is why there's a mining the whole talent this year that the president has convened. Minister is champion together with the president and the convergence of the mining the whole talent in October. Of mining participants in October this
I think that covers those questions. Honorable Mandela, sustainable development and transformation. How far have we gone? It's quite variable, Mandela. It's quite variable. I think what we were trying to demonstrate in the presentation is that we've looked at every aspect of transformation just to indicate how far we have gone. Perhaps when you ask about broad-based and shareholders' rights together, we are only at 6.3%. So if you are looking at those that have broadened the base, there's evidence of triple dividends, and there's meaningful shareholder rights in the deal. We are at 6.3%. That is the reality of the fact that it is before us. What are we doing with the non-compliance? After 10 years, Honorable Matiwa, what we have done so far was to present an aggregated view, the status of the industry in its entirety. And we are saying from the introduction of the charter in 2004 to end of 2014, this is how far we have come. Is it far enough? Well, yes and no. There are circumstances that we have come very far, and there are those that we are still lagging significantly behind, like the broad-based shareholder that you have alluded to. I think on non-compliance is what I have explained earlier, that we'll invoke, and we've already started invoking those sections of the law. In the event that indeed the market conditions are extremely unfavorable, it can be tested, and that the spirit and the latter of implementing the charter is there, and a determination is then made by the minister that look, this is worthy of, you know, considering those conditions. But section 93, 98, 99, and ultimately section 47, that results in the withdrawal of the license. Because it also cannot be that some of the time you find it very strange that individual main rights holders, the leading companies, continue to do very well by themselves, other than their partner, their transformation partner. You do have those circumstances. When it comes to implementing the transformation aspect, all types of excuses. But when you look at the financial statement, and you look at the dividends paid, and you look at the reward of executives and so on, you know, increasing by multiples of percentages. Let me also hasten to indicate, Davinica, that part of the amendment is to further strengthen the sanctions of the MPRDA. The maximum fine currently, before you can withdraw a license, is $500,000. That's the maximum fine. That is hardly a deterrent. The next best thing is to take your license away. And then you know what happens. They say, why are you taking them? They're threatening us with taking licenses away. Now, what we are doing is we are aligning the sanctions with the Competition Commission. And
ramping it up to 10% of revenue. And we think that would be a very good thing. Because the maximum of 500,000 in an industry that generates on average 400 billion is completely insignificant. And even shareholders don't get to see that as a line item in their financials. And an element of accountability are therefore burdened under the insignificance of the current levels of finance. But I think if someone had to go and account to the shareholders why 10% of the revenue generated has been diverted because of negligence of non-compliance, we think that would be a very good deterrent. The weighting on the basis of employees, is not linked to the houses necessarily. The current charter, as it stands, looks at the operations that still have those traditional hostels, and we still have them. I think there were 67 odd operations. We can get the actual figures. I think it's about 67 of those that still had 16 men living in one room. So that is as far back as 2010. And what we then found, and what does this mean? We then found that some of them have been reduced to about 4 men in the room, and it still was, and there's still 4 beds and 4 men in the room. And that goes contrary to what we agreed to, because as the charter says, we said we want to rid of the legacy of the industry undermining the dignity of mine workers in a way that it takes a differentiated approach to providing housing and living conditions based on the race of the workers. And there are some races that the families are provided for. And there are those races for which men have to live together in the room. And that, at the outset, that the element of the charter was seeking to correct. Now, what Section 100 does beyond the mining charter, it has created a provision for the development of housing and living standards code. This code has been developed, it has been published, and before it's published, it has been adopted after extensive consultation with all the mining stakeholders and subsequently published. Now, what the code does is it begins to define beyond the four walls that the Navigator is talking about. It says these are the living, it's the housing and living conditions. It goes as far as talking about the nutrition of the mine workers. Because the argument that was used for sustainability in 2010 was that you cannot talk about productivity of the workers if they live under appalling conditions. The housing and living conditions seeks to then prescribe the absolute basic minimum of the housing and living standards for the mine workers. And it is definitely affected the register that the Royal Bafokeng, the Anglo American Platinum, Kumba Iron Ore, and a few others have gone beyond the call of duty in terms of those standards. But unfortunately, we still have a lot of others that remain below the minimum threshold. And again, on the issue of non-compliance, it comes to the
relevant provisions of the Act that deals with non-compliance, and our intention to strengthen that provision for sanctions. I think the same applies for 25. Oh yes, the housing and living standards. Oh yes, it's 45% is the extent of compliance. What are we doing with the other 55? The same one that is Section 93 first, Section 98, 99, failing which we invoke Section 47. And at that stage we'll have to withdraw the licenses, unfortunately. And I think the same argument applies with the community development. I've covered all your questions. The number of mining companies on the summary. Okay. We can go and close the system and provide it to the committee in writing. It's embedded in the details that we have provided. But we could take that information and convert it into a number and provide it to you.
Okay. I knew.
Honorable Esteban, Honorable Lorima, Honorable Matala, good.
Thank you, sir. I'd like to thank Wal Mabuza for his responses. Just a large amount in his conclusion on page 57. The portfolio committee presented with the number of the mining houses that have not met the target, so that we know who are the companies that have not met the target and what targets particularly have they not met. Second one, Chairperson, Ubal Mabuza speaks of about 67 mines which are still running hostels, and we would like to also know which of those 67 mines is speaking of in terms of, and there's been some changes from 16 men in a room to 4 men in a room, and we would like more detail in that so we understand who is not complying and what the department his own thinking is in and around that. What are the set dates for the total transformation into single room units? Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Two issues. We have access to the report. And I think it is a much more complete report than the presentation we have today. So even if you would like to engage in it, what level of reporting would we have access to? Then secondly, about, I think 2010, around about there, the committee went through a public hearing, if we could call it, exercise in the middle of chamber, calling on, I think, the 10 major mining companies to come and indicate, I think, their level of compliance and to, I think, give their version of their compliance. And maybe the question to the chairman, but you put a little bit of public pressure on him, is do you think there should be similar exercise conducted and was it a worthwhile one? Because I think it sounded very interesting and interesting. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I was going to say, even if it was 10,000 or more prospecting rights that was issued, you know, South Africa, there are very few minerals that we haven't got, really. We sit with something like 5.4 trillion rand worth of mineral rights in this country. And yet, if it's not prospective, and it'll stay underground, it's going to stay underground. I still actually don't agree. In the mining in Java earlier this year, where the minister was present, and Mr. Bernard Swanepoel, I think, the ex-CEO of Harmony, on his presentation, he said that a mineral right is awarded to the 10,000 people and nobody queried it at the time. When the presentation was given there, the answer was given to Nkosi Mandela, he was said that it's not 10 years. The time frame that was given was 7 years. And that the use it or lose it policy that was bold, or principle that was incorporated into the regulation was not applied. And a lot of these people actually, what they did, they bought their Bentleys and they moved on. They never mined. They never actually started to mine. And I think the figure that you quoted in the presentation, 440, was the only small miners or junior miners that actually did something out of the 10,000. That's how I have it. Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Mr. Mabuza, you spoke about steps that the DMR was going to be taking against non-compliance. Has the DMR done any kind of study as to what kind of impact these steps may have on employment? If you haven't done a study like that, why not? And if you have, what does it tell you? Secondly, could you give us your opinion on why environmental compliance is so low? My third issue is a bit more esoteric. The great sage Confucius said, the beginning of wisdom is to call things by their proper name. I see on page 12, you talk about three different categories of HDFA ownership. And those categories are community and ESOPs and entrepreneurs. When I was first reading through this thing, I was wondering about the word entrepreneurs. So I looked it up. Wikipedia says entrepreneurship is a process of starting a business. Typically it's starting a company based around an innovative product or process or service. The Oxford English Dictionary says a person who sets up a business or businesses taking on financial risk. And the Cambridge English Dictionary for Business says someone who makes money by starting their own business. So we're not really talking about entrepreneurs. I think we should get that straight. What we're talking about is beneficiaries. Because these people aren't starting new businesses. They're being allocated shares. In many cases, they're taking little or no personal risk. So I think that's what you should think about changing your terminology from entrepreneurs, because these people certainly are not that.
Yeah, thank you, Honorable Chair. As I was getting out during the questions time, when I was still talking to my assessors, I'm not quite sure as to whether I'm not sure whether some of the questions that I want to raise, my colleagues might have raised them. And of course, I have a problem because I wanted to raise a number of questions, but you said I must speak after all of these honorable members. But it's okay, it's fine. Let me ask one question, Chair, which comes from time to time in all the presentations of the department. It's on slide 40, employment equity. You are saying females are still underrepresented as 10.5%, especially Africans and colored. And further, you are saying white males still dominate most of the subject categories of employment. Is there any concerted effort or a realizable and achievable program or a plan in place from the department with regard to the transfer of skills from the issues you have raised with regard to females and males, white males dominating the employment equity? Is there any plan or a program in place to address some of these problems that we are faced with from time to time? Because I'm afraid, Chair, if we don't address this, or maybe it might be addressed by people or those who are employed in a higher position, so who are going to retire very soon. I thought it might not be addressed by the retirement of people who are going out from Santa, who are going to die. I thought that there must be a program, concerted program, a realizable one, for employment, in particular to address the young female and males, in particular the historically disadvantaged ones. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Okay, before you answer this, Marbles, you see, I know you're doing it and you're saying it's important, but when you invite one of the members in a very indirect way and then there is no invitation, they assume it's me. You say there is a plan finding the whole thing. Now it's all complete. Oh, the name of mining parties. Yeah. I don't want tomorrow to say, no, but the one that is the mining code. And then the next thing, there is no invitation. And we are caught up the economy. Then you also clarify the issue. Well, I could see people who are driving Toyota cars with water. So don't worry, it's a personal experience that was being made. But that's two issues, I think let's get to honest. I think the point that Honorable Smith was raising may not entirely lie in this comment. The difficulty in the first case is that this presentation is a summary of the report, not the actual report. Which I think for me, whether you say the next booklet or whatever you want us to have, but I think it will be fair for the committee to have the report as a report, so that it can then see how it goes. Let me be honest enough, I don't think we'll be able to exhaust this issue in today's meeting. Two, in your conclusion, I want to tell the best one, in your conclusion, I can't get a sense as to what then becomes the way forward. So you finish your tenure, what next? It will then address that question whether you look at public hearings or whatever the case that might be. But in the absence of the clarity on what then is going to be the next step, it's very difficult for planning purposes to know whether this is one area that we have to include in the program of the committee as well to be done. So we have to get clarity now on the way forward, and also on what becomes the measure in the interim. Because there is no clarity. You can't use it now. That thing, to be honest, it has expired. So what are you using as a measurement in between? So we have to get that. That's the diversity that I've got my own opinion that continues to worry me. But the first one is that I hope, because this categorization is what sometimes makes debate unnecessary. We categorize equity always on the basis of race or gender. And that's why I'm saying I don't want to comment now, because I'm just looking at the summary of the report, not the actual report. Surely, in an industry like mining, with so much fatalities and the rest, I find it very odd that there is nothing that talks about people with disability under the equity. That's why sometimes this concern is always raised, that you just put them in order to justify the end. Nashua says they are not treated entirely as really belonging there. They are treated as if they are just being put as if they're writing at the back of race equity and gender equity. In actual sense, they are more like stepchild there, who are members only when you want to justify. So that's why I'm saying I will have to look at the actual report may give us, because there is no way, that's one thing that should have a high turnover of people who are physically challenged, mostly. Now, I can't tell you when you were affected by a falling stone and your leg has been amputated, that in the market, those people now have got no space. It used to be like that before, go stay home. I know my uncle, go stay home, we are working on pressing the whole effort below his hands. Now, I would say you see the same rules that is still applying now. You are paraplegic and there is no place for you. I'm saying we have to look at that aspect. It's worrying, I must say. To me, it's not only worrying on just on this. On gender, there's a complete imbalance, both sides. You look at the category, even if you look on the category of life, they still tell you things very less when it comes to females, and a high turnover when it comes to men. It says it's a world that is dominated by men. Even if you justify on the side of Africans and men, you still find a similar pattern. So it seems in the process of trying to reach the point of equilibrium, men are pushing each other up because
from your board, for men, is 32% African, is 37% white male. Then female is 9.4. All the other side is white, is 3.4. It's yes, 3.4. So it tells you that there is a problem that even before going to the other aspect. And for me, your intervention should be able to respond to that situation. So but as I said, that it's not my intention. I think the biggest problem again, and I must say this issue, I'm not denying what you are saying, but it's going to be this issue of pharmacology. The battle of this one again, which unfortunately we seem to be going deeper and deeper into even ourselves about traditional leadership, vis-à-vis their own community. But in some of these areas, we find that there is war. In fact, immediately those mineral resources available, that's the beginning of the problem. To understand that the hereditary issues begin to emerge, who is supposed to be in charge, who is not supposed to be. In one of these cases, it was even reported that it didn't really lead to loss of life. Because I know the insurance on his own, I'm supposed to be the next who's going to be the chief. So I must understand those old bodies, we remove the one who's supposed to be the chief and must take over. If the son is still young, I'm accumulating in between until that time. So, but that is not the point. The point is that if we use the back, that is determining for us. Do we really think that traditional leaders are up to the level of knowledge that they should have understood their role in this exercise? How much awareness work has been done? Well, it's not enough to say why the consultations should have taken place. How much work is being done for them? Because even in the legislation that now is going around, that issue seems to be going to be the problem. But the danger with that exercise is that if we don't do it now, the risk is very high that when people become aware without being introduced to it, then you are going to have a problem of a challenge where they extend what is there beyond what you can do, and then are unable to move. So I thought the last issue is in that procurement area. That's why I said the problem is you don't have this report. It's not just where you procure, it's what you procure. So maybe the report can give you a reflection that around special local procurement, around what type of material that is the subject of local procurement. But I think honorable members, my take on the matter is that until I'm trying to look at it as to how do we process, because finally we'll have to be up to the task. There has to be a way where as a committee, and I don't think here now we'll be doing justice, as a committee, we find a way of processing the report itself. Why the department might be doing it online? And I don't think we'll have to wait for the department to finalize what it's doing. The committee must be able to, and assist us, and I remember to say, how does the committee process? We will receive the report, and when we receive the report, now flowing from this summer, either we need a full day or what, that we look at it. But I think your answer, especially on the way forward, might also be able to assist the committee to understand how you can process the issues long.
Honorable Ngabenzisa, you were summarizing what we have promised you, and those are the constituted deliverables back to the committee. think on the question of the report which both Honorable Chair and Honorable Smith asked, yes, there is a report. And we will make it available. The report has also been published on the website of the department, the narrative. I think this one covers in part both Honorable Ashley and Honorable Norman. And it's about the 10,000 figure. I'm not aware of the figure that Bernard Somerton quoted as a mining number, but we'll have a look at it. I would love to know where Bernard gets the figure of 10,000 mining jobs which are administered by the department. I would pay far more credence to the figure of the department than someone who has involved. And so I think that, but I would love to check that figure and see what his source of information is. If indeed he has been issuing 10,000 mining rights, they will take him on that.
What is the figure?
We said just under 1,700 in total. But you work it that way, you know, those that have been in operation less than 2 years out, those who are operating 10 years out, those who are undertaking bulk sampling out, and there's a few other categories. So you go them from 1.7 to 962. And out of the 962, we said 442 sub-meters. And if you take the employee as a weighting, that 442 represents over 95% of the total workers in the workforce. And as we said, statisticians would kill for a coverage because they normally work on the base of 30% of the sample to have reasonable confidence. And we are talking about coverage of over 95%. We think it's a pretty good coverage. And why it covers the Honorable Lorima in part is I think it's a little bit unfair to say, and I think as Honorable Lorima calls it, these people are beneficiaries. I think we have pretty good records for 4 years in this country. And I think it would be unfortunate for us in our conversation to say that these people are beneficiaries. I think they have very good recognition, records of the they must be recognized for their efforts. Those who started and built them in partnership and some of them started all my research, they have a handful there. It's a good story.
And those are entrepreneurs, but the others aren't.
So I think that one I will leave it to you, Chairman. But I think that's a conversation we must have when we amend and we will come to the status as to which way we use. Why is environmental compliance so low? I would not want to venture a guess to be honest with you. And I think it's only fair that we go back to the department and get our environmental colleagues to give us details on the extent of compliance corroborated against what has been reported by the industry itself. Because what we are presenting here their own information. So I'll be a little bit skeptical to venture against it. Honorable Masala, and I think partly linked to Honorable Chair as well, is the female representation. And that, I think, yes, is it at a certain level? I know. But for many years, ladies, black or white, were precluded by law from working in the job. And it's only after 1994 and perhaps far more explicitly with the MPRBA and the introduction of the tax that the doors opened wide for women participation with no limitations. And today we have women working on the ground or anywhere in the operations of the organization.
And so we're including top management.
Including top management, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, right through all the levels. I mean, they could not be in top management or underground or anywhere other than secretaries or any or tea, providing tea, or working in the kitchen. And I think it was only recently through the transformative laws that ladies were now allowed by law to participate in the dinner. Have we come a long way? Yes, we have. Do we see representation across various spectrum? Yes. Are we proud of this as department? Yes. Is it enough? No. It's not enough. So to your question, what interventions are in place? There's several of them. The MQA has specific programs that are designed for empowerment of ladies. In fact, the both ministers, for as long as I've been in the department, I'm not sure when it started, in partnership with the industry, they have a girl learner, a technical girl learner scholarship program. And I think that's now over 50 young ladies who are studying your technical courses, your mining engineering, metallurgy, geology, and so on, with the sole intention of putting them in and accelerating through the index. That's the second one. The third one is that the very mining charter places a deliberate bias towards development of females, of ladies, because it emphasizes on the demographic spread of expenditure. So if you are spending your 5% and you are spending it on white men, you are not solving the problem. And so it places a particular bias in that it says, I want to see your expenditure leading more towards the demographic spread of the population. And with ladies being at 52%, you then expect a minimum or perhaps higher of 52% expenditure towards skills development. And those are just some of the clear indications. We're taking a long-term view and not necessarily looking at specific solutions. And of course, we believe in that the industry is going to grow sustainably into the future and hopefully create sufficient room for equitable representation in the industry, including ladies. I must apologize, Chair, for making reference to mining Lakota In the room is a former culprit of mining water preparation, and I think that's where my tongue twisted. It's intended to say mining practice. Mining practice that the president pronounced in his name of the meeting. I apologize for that. I think the presentation has covered. Earlier, that one is the most critical question, Chairperson. There are two things that have been of great concern to the mining industry and to the DMA. One, which is more important, is the alignment of broad-based Black Economic Empowerment Act, the NTGI Code, and the Mining Act, because mining does not operate in a vacuum. It's part of the economy, it's part of the whole in the economy, and it's definitely an argument to be made on the sufficient alignment of the two. And then of course the second one is the amendment of the mining charter so that we do not create a vacuum. And the critical next step is that if I can jump, the second step is the amendment to amend the charter this year to close that gap that the current charter is obsolete. The first step is to communicate to our stakeholders that until such time that the charter is amended, the current one will remain in force. Because transformation remains a central tenet of the transformation remains a central tenet of the country and development broadly. And we are not overly concerned with the vacuum because in terms of the Interpretation Act, the vacuum cannot be created in the north. It's something that was applicable, it will remain applicable until the end. But I think the most critical step is how quickly are we going to amend the charter. We are definitely looking at this financial to I think your question on the disability is absolutely a key one in terms of the relationship of those that are injured at work and what happens. That is another aspect that we need to connect to. We consult with the Chief Inspectorate of Mines about that information and present the report to the Chair. I think the issue of Makoti and our advocacy, there is a problem, there is definitely an argument to be made that whereas you might have the provisions in law, you may not necessarily be undertaking sufficient advocacy program so that in this case the
traditional authority insufficiently empowered to understand what is their role in the law, as you said. And there is room for us to check out our advocacy program, and certainly in processing the bill, and as you know, in the letter of the president, he's also identified the traditional leader, the role of traditional leader. I suppose that the conversation that we have in that process.
Okay, let's find a way forward. We can't speak to my only concern is that I don't want to enter the terrain that is not necessarily a matter that you seem to be comfortable with. But the reality is that you are the mining charter, that your firms are set up and put your firms in a box of a 10-year. And reading that commitment of 10 years is not saying it's what is you. You see? So legally, we have to check the law whether what you are saying that the mining charter after 10 years until, because it's never said in the law. So we have to check whether after 10 years your mining charter is still relevant and applicable. Because tomorrow we're going to meet with you, you tell us that you try to implement it. And some people have told you that no, this was meant for 10 years, and 10 years is now. So I'm just saying, that commitment that you are giving us now, legally, is whether you have a legal standing on it. I'm not a lawyer. Honorable Kusmet is here. I don't know whether he's an administrative lawyer or but the reality is that sitting here, I cannot buy what you are just telling us. We might bring us another problem. Which is why, anyway, by the way, I'm not blaming the department. That's why you're in court. And I think we have, that's why I was saying to members, maybe we must find a corner, let's box each other and then come up with how we're going to help the country forward. The reality is that the absence of certainty in law creates problems. Part of the argument that says, not to say we would agree with them entirely, but it could be the best argument that if you set up with something for 10 years, and in between you bring something that changes what you said people must comply with. So, the certainty in law, in my view, I would have expected also in that process, besides what you are seeing in terms of a declaration by law, the reality is that I would appreciate that part of your way forward should reflect in the engagement with stakeholders affected. Now, not later, how much work has been done. And I can't get that sense that you are already engaging. But the minute you come to the later stage, you must expect that you may need resistance from all corners. By now you should be putting your finger to understand how do you take the process forward and how amenable are they in taking the process forward, rather than to do it later. Let's say this one also from a course. I don't buy, I must be honest. Personally, I don't buy. You have not done enough work with traditional leaders. Let's have accept that. If not. Otherwise, we'll be having all these complaints that are coming in from there. In fact, sometimes you get convinced they don't understand how much power the authorities they have in relation to the report that probably is needed now coming from Fumala. It will tell you. In fact, they feel, generally, that between the department and mining companies, what they do is like, they really do not exist. They don't have power, they don't have authority of determination. But I'm putting that aside because that's what we are raising in relation to this matter. That even in the report talks about, it may not be relevant to the mining charter. This one is out. But I'm just saying as a panelist, that even if you look at problems with the municipalities, generally in terms of understanding what role they can play, really they are always caught they feel that all wasn't happening in the level of imposition to that. So on that I'm raising that issue. I just wanted to that we finalize honorable members to take a way forward. Please go to my page. You'll find book. No, you said your answer was that it's on our website. You said it's on our website. Now I don't know to say, you know why. Okay. Can we make this important to them, please? Can we then finalize in the next meeting next week when we have forwarded you the report? How are we going to process this matter as a committee and taking consideration on the issues? Because the point that is raising again, which now Honorable Smith puts us on the standing, is that they want to do this process within the financial year, which confirms now that it's another program added to the program of the committee. If I hear you claim, you said you want to do all these issues, including the amendment that you want to put within this financial year. Okay. Is that correct that we then deliver on the process, having received the original code, I listened to what the word you used. What are that English word, big one? I don't want to be one of the women yourself fighting over the interpretation of the previous one. But that word that you used, narrative. The problem with narrative to me is a summary. I don't want them to enter English. Okay. On that note, that is what we will be dealing with. It's got to deal with the process.
Thank you. It's the last one, I think. I can see my colleagues are not well. They want to go for some other things. So, thank you.
I fear to ask you something, because you said you were going to consult your ancestors. Now, it was your ancestors that are telling you that the people who are not right. Maybe you move from being in Kosi to Sango, but your clarification.
Yeah, anyway, it's possible the internet. One or two questions. When are we going to say we are happy, Mr. Mabuza? We are happy, we are done with this employment equity. When are we going to say the department is happy, we are happy, all of us? There is no longer this imbalances of employment in various institutions that belongs to the department. Two last ones in relation to, I'm not sure, but I would suggest that don't you think it's necessary for us, the portfolio committee and the department, to inculcate this mining charter, because I'm afraid, Chair, if we don't do that, we'll sit here for the next coming 4 years to raise similar questions that were raised today or in the previous presentation. So we'll sit here asking the same questions, getting the same answers, not going anywhere until the next committee comes in 2019 and ask the same questions to the same department, not going anywhere, not doing anything for this country. I'm afraid, Chair, I thought maybe we might have a time where we can interrogate some serious issues that are affecting all of us, not in the department or the committee, but the people of South Africa, because we are representing them, irrespective of political affiliation. I thought maybe we might have time. I don't know what time, but anyway, we are fresh from the flood, but
because we want to run and make sure that we implement and do what the people of South Africa send us for us to do here. We have time, let's create time to interrogate the money chart to alleviate some of the fears that some of us, in particular the opposition, might have. Thank you, Chair.
No, I don't think Honourable Mabuza is to answer that question.
No.
You're raising the same issue I was saying, that we have as a committee to agree on how we're going to process the report, particularly the narrative that we're going to begin with. The issue is that the department was giving us the result of the mining charter in terms of compliance. I think it would be very difficult now to know when will the companies comply with the equity, because their work is to monitor compliance. So it can only be finalized when the results reflect compliance, not non-compliance. I think it's going to be, can you agree that as well, sir, that we'll deal with the process going forward on the time that all of Mashara is talking about. We'll create time as a committee, we'll then be able to process this matter. Can we go to the next item? Honorable President.
Chair, can I please just read you something quick from the Sun Tech Times? A colleague of the gentleman over there, Mr. Chris Barron, just two sentences. On paper, if you look at a mineral right that has been awarded to the 10,000 or more junior miners in South Africa, very few are actually mining, the users or losers, blah, blah, blah. But the 10,000. That's the point I wanted to make. So if I'm wrong, I actually got it from Mr. Barron, the Sunday Times.
But the issue that the Sunday Times is writing is not teaching miners. We can only as a committee work according to what is presented to us as facts. And if the department is giving us a misleading or wrong information, I'm sure they know what are the consequences thereof. We deal with that issue. But what we can't deny is that if we are given an information and there is contrary information, No, we can't go to the Sunday Times and say, give us, where did you get this information? They've got the freedom of press, so they will express their views. But if they said that what we are given here is contrary to what it is, then unfortunately, I know some of us are not know. Okay, the next item page 2. Page 7. Any more of us? Not a reminder. Thank you, sir. I'd like to move for the adoption of the minutes of the 24th of June 2015. Thank you. Any second, sir? Why are you crying, Honorable Majani? Honorable Jasper?
Progress needs to be made in changing the legislation to harmonize Rimwa and Khoikhoi. But having said that, Mr. Chair, it's more, if you look at the first page, which I should have raised there, you see the agenda, it says briefing by Professor R. Ehrlich on the court case against mining companies. So I'm not sure that is correctly stated as the agenda. I think the agenda was a bit wider than what is stated as the agenda there.
Where?
Look at the first page. Date, time, venue, agenda, and then it says briefing by, it repeats briefing by, but even despite that, it's not only it's more a briefing on the effects of Khoikhoi and the Rimwa, not only on the court cases against mining companies, by the way, representing thousands of mining and diversity cases, but it's never been popular. Maybe not, but there's a specification in here.
I also think it's correct on the way forward. But I think the problem, the issue was that I think the deputy minister had volunteered to don't want to use the wrong word to say to come back with the comments, but to work just in terms of communication of the work from both sides. And I remember making second today we were also going to everything customer for the compensation that was going to be done to the mine workers with the Department of Health. So my understanding was that we were going to look at how to put those things together. My only worry is that in this committee we seem to be having so much overlap with many other committees, which is an issue we have to look at. That work was the deputy minister had made voluntarily together. I don't know how we can monitor the deputy minister, but let me take the responsibility to check with him how far he has gone with the work, because there was a bit to put a consolidated work with health and labor around this issue. So I said I will take the initiative to check with him how far is that process or how steep that process can be taken. And whether the issue of putting those funds together in one way or the other, we will have to look at that. Okay. In the case of this way, then other matter. For the meeting next week, we'll have some of the we'll
Next week, we will be, amongst other things, dealing with the report. We have to process on the report. Eastern Cape, case at hand. It's one report to remember. Then the Northern Cape. If possible, maybe we'll just jump to next week. And that week, we have to process in Mpumalanga. Because as I said initially, we can't go on a next expedition, if we do it that way, without submitting a report of the previous one. So we have to find a way to be on par so that by the time we get another break, all the reports will have been submitted for the committee. So we will submit the report, I think if you can see it, to it at least by tomorrow. That's one member, thank you. That's all you. Yeah. KZN, Eastern Cape, and Northern Cape. Let's take it. And then we'll deal with that report next week. Then CSIR is here again. And the Department of EMR Department. CSIR, no, don't complain. It's our duty. We have to work. While CSIR is not supposed to be combined with MINTEC, remember that committee that is coordinated by you. Yes, that's what I'm saying. It's a big minute. Yeah. That's why when you say to them, I'm specifically the human being. We told CSIR is the one who's, yes, is the one who's putting them together. No. I know the letter was worried about the topic, let me put it like that, of food for next, which is the point we couldn't do. So it's a briefing by the Deputy Minister on the coordination of the fresh work together with CSIR, which is here. Okay, now I've got it better English. Okay, on that note, then we'll also put the load again, another overload of the process going forward, processing the presentation of today. So you can see it's going to be a loaded attendance. Okay, in the absence of any other matter, the committee stand by hand. Thank you very much.
We are released. So another information.
So they're going to do this, and it was going to be around the coast. But the question is whether it is constitutional, because I am lying, which is racial cause, is being exactly involved.
I think that's 2010.